Graffiti containing specific personal threats and a bomb threat prompted heightened security at a Missoula high school this week. The graffiti found at Big Sky High School was found Monday morning. Missoula County Public School Director of Technology and Communication, Hatton Littman, says the graffiti indicated a bomb would be detonated at the school tomorrow, Friday, September the 13th. Several students' names were mentioned in the graffiti, but only one was specifically threatened.
The school started an immediate investigation in conjunction with the school resource officer and the Missoula Police Department. They notified the parents of the students whose names were mentioned and worked closely with them. And then they notified the parents of all the students in the school today at approximately 10:30 in the morning via our Alert Now system.
The Alert Now system allows the district and individual schools to send a voice and or email message to all parents on their identified home phone number within minutes. Littman says investigators determined it was appropriate to wait to notify the rest of the school about the threatening graffiti until today because they had reason to believe there was no immediate threat.
You know, I was in the building earlier this morning and there was certainly a flush of concern as it started to get around the building that this was going on. And before I left the school, things had significantly calmed down. There are parents that are calling in that are concerned, and we certainly believe in a safe teaching and learning environment for students, and we want to inform parents that there is a potential threat for tomorrow. We've increased police presence in and around the school starting this afternoon, tomorrow, and ongoing into next week.
Littman adds there's simply not enough credible evidence to warrant a full school closure for tomorrow. She says parents can make their own decision to keep their children home or send them to school. Littman says this seems to be an isolated case.
There's no indication that this is an ongoing thing. Sure, there could be potential that it's a Friday the 13th kind of scare, but there was nothing in the graffiti that specifically pointed out to any other meaning for Friday the 13th. Simply that date was mentioned.
Littman says no other local school have reported similar incidents or threats.
And in other news from around the state, a federal judge has ordered a Kalispell woman released from jail on her own recognizance as she awaits a murder trial in the death of her new husband. U.S. Magistrate Judge Jeremiah Lynch said today that 22-year-old Jordan Lynn Graham did not pose a flight risk because of her strong community ties and does not appear to be a danger to others. Prosecutors asked the court to reverse the move and return Graham to custody, saying she poses a safety risk and has repeatedly lied to investigators. Graham is accused of pushing 25-year-old Cody Lee Johnson off a cliff to his death in Glacier National Park on July 7th after the two argued. Prosecutors say Graham earlier that day told a friend she was having doubts about her 8-day-old marriage.
Montana Senator John Tester says that he opposes a military strike in Syria. The Obama administration had asked Congress to vote for military action against Syria to destroy its chemical weapons. In recent days, though, focus has shifted to diplomatic efforts where Syria possibly could turn over its stockpile. Tester said today in a statement that he has been listening to Montanans and is, quote, convinced a military strike at this time will only make the situation worse, unquote. The Democrat says the best solution is pressuring Syria to give up its chemical weapons. Earlier this week, Republican U.S. Representative Steve Daines said he would oppose military action in Syria. U.S. Senator Max Baucus has said it's unclear if a vote will even be requested.
The public employee pension system is being told it should expect less on future investment earnings. A consultant told the retirement board today that it should slightly reduce the expectation of earning 7.75% interest on invested pension funds. The key assumption is used to predict how much money will be in the system. Decreasing the figure would increase projected shortfalls. But the board decided against making any changes because the system is still adjusting to all the changes in the legislature's pension fix. The consultant said that fix could ensure the system balances in about 16 years, although a portion is still subject to a lawsuit. The board was also told it doesn't have to worry about a technical snafu that could have inadvertently gutted the fix.
The state says a relatively easy fire season has reduced annual suppression costs. The state forester told lawmakers today that the state's share for fire suppression is around $11 million. That compares to nearly $60 million last year. Bob Harrington said Montana was very fortunate with the occasional heavy rains that came with the lightning that often create wildfires. And he credited state and local firefighters with improved suppression of fire starts that could have caused big problems. He said the state should leave the year with about $40 million in reserve fire suppression account. The state says some of that surplus money could be used for fuel reduction in risky areas. Fire total 192 square miles in Montana this year, down substantially from 18,750 square miles last year.
We've all seen the video of Chinese citizens wearing face masks to try to mitigate the effects of terrible air pollution, much of which is caused by China's burning of coal. This year has been especially bad, with some health organizations estimating coal burning is now causing up to 1 million deaths a year in China from pollution-related illness. China burns a lot of coal because it has enormous energy needs for its large population. But Chinese citizens are starting to worry about the trade-off, and the new government is promising to scale back its coal burning. Still, Montana's coal industry sees China as a potential huge market for Montana coal. Chuck Deneau is with the coal advocacy organization Count on Coal Montana. He says even with scaling back, China remains a big market for coal.
And if you look at where China is projected to go in terms of overall energy production into the future, sure, they might be scaling back slightly in terms of where coal fits in their energy mix, but in the tremendous amount of growth that they have, the curve is up and to the right in their energy production. So even if they scale, reduce the percentage of coal in the energy mix, overall they're still going to be using more coal on into the future.
Li Fengfeng disagrees. He's an environmental advocate who lives in Beijing and is currently touring Montana to speak against more coal development. Li Feng says China currently gets 70% of its energy from coal, but plans to reduce the consumption to 65% by 2017. And he says leading banks are now warning investors against putting their money into coal development.
And they have sent reports to the investors, tell them, okay, if you want to invest into this area, you will not make profit.
Li Feng says while China must still use coal on the short term, it is greatly boosting its investment in renewable energy for the future. He says Chinese citizens are increasingly opposed to coal burning because of the health effects.
The Chinese people is concerned about air pollution. Now, air pollution is the biggest problem in China now, and people are voice out, and they want to say no to coal, especially in the coastal regions of China.
Coal advocate Chuck Deneau says China still needs coal to develop its economy and meet its energy needs.
There's health concerns that come with not having access to energy either. It's hard to provide clean water, for instance, to people when you don't have access to electricity. This is part of a complicated mix. We've got to look at all pieces of the puzzle.
Chinese activist Li Fengfeng will speak at a public forum on coal tonight at 7 o'clock in the University Center on the University of Montana campus. His talk is sponsored by the Northern Plains Resource Council.
U.S. Marshals and police in Helena have arrested a man wanted on a homicide warrant issued in San Diego, California. The Independent Record reports 36-year-old Fong Tang Woon was arrested yesterday at the nail salon where he worked. The warrant was issued Monday. The Marshals Service says Woon is a suspect in a February 2000 homicide in Mira Mesa, California. No other details were immediately released.
An attorney for a Montana State prison inmate who is serving a 100-year sentence without the possibility of parole for a murder he says he didn't commit is asking the state parole board to recommend he receive a parole hearing. Attorney Peter Camille tells the Great Falls Tribune he sent an application for commutation, or a reduction of sentence, to members of the State Board of Pardons and Parole yesterday on behalf of Barry Beach. The application includes more than 200 letters of support. The board in 2007 denied Beach a recommendation for a gubernatorial pardon. Camille noted the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that life sentences without parole can't be given to juvenile offenders. Beach was 17 at the time of Kimberly Niece's death in Poplar in 1979.
A Montana State prison inmate serving a life sentence for murder died last month of a drug overdose. Powell County Coroner John Pohl tells the Billings Gazette that 23-year-old Cleveland Benjamin Boyer died August 23rd of mixed drug toxicity. County Attorney Lewis Smith declined to comment on what drugs Boyer had in his system. Prison spokeswoman Linda Mudry said yesterday that prison authorities had no more information about Boyer's death. Boyer was sentenced in January for deliberate homicide in the shooting death of Danny Valenzuela at a downtown Billings convenience store. Valenzuela was shot on March 13th, 2011 and died 6 days later. Lewis said he has not yet decided whether to hold a coroner's inquest in Boyer's death.
A federal judge has dismissed a lawsuit by current and former Lake County Sheriff's Office employees against the sheriff and three of his officers. U.S. District Judge Dana Christensen yesterday rejected the claims that Sheriff Jay Doyle, Michael Sargent, Dan Durie, and Dan Yonkin retaliated against the plaintiffs over efforts to expose corruption. Terry Leonard, Stephen Kenley, Michelle Gale, and Ben Woods, and Levi Reed claimed in the 2012 lawsuit that they were reprimanded, demoted, and subject to a hostile work environment after they reported alleged illegal activities by the defendants. The plaintiffs also claimed they were retaliated against when they opposed Doyle's 2010 election campaign. But Christensen agreed with the magistrate judge's recommendation the plaintiffs' claims of constitutional violations were unfounded or couldn't be brought because of previous litigation.
People traveling into, across, and within Montana pulling boats may have noticed something different this summer. Mandatory boat check stations are not new to the state, but increased funding means there are more of them. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry has more on the effort to halt the spread of aquatic invasive species.
Montana currently has no known cases of zebra or quagga mussels in its waters. There are some isolated spots with Eurasian water milfoil, and aquatic invasive species specialist Linnea Schroer with Fish, Wildlife, and Parks says they want to keep it that way.
We believe it's just as important to keep things from being moved around inside the state as keeping things from entering the state. So it's really a two-pronged approach.
Schroer says with increased funding out of the last legislative session, the state set up 20 mandatory check stations, up from 16 the year before. The state has seasonally permanent check stations in places like the Noxon Reservoir, where there's a known problem with Eurasian water milfoil, as well as at major border entry points.
Different users need to be targeted in different ways, or else you'll miss an entire user group. You know, there's people who only use the same water body a few miles from their house, you know, or maybe, you know, a small set of water bodies just within a few miles. And if you want to reach those people, you're not going to catch them on the interstate.
Schroer says there are also several roving check stations set up that work along different recreation zones, including the Bitterroot Valley, Swan Valley, and Madison River, among others. FWP and the State Department of Natural Resources and Conservation shares the $1.6 million allocated to the AIS program. FWP partners with the Forest Service, Army Corps of Engineers, Bureau of Reclamation, and the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes to manage the check stations. The DNRC takes the lead in all eradication and control efforts. Schroer says it's possible for drivers hauling boats to pass more than one check station in a day, and they are required to stop. She says once a boat has passed an inspection, it can get a boat seal that attaches to the boat and trailer.
And it shows the next inspector, this boat has been inspected, it's clean, it doesn't need to be inspected again. So that saves the member of the public from having to be inspected twice when they're moving throughout the state.
Schroer says they're still in the education phase and haven't written citations for not stopping, but people towing boats who don't stop could get a ticket. It is illegal to transport aquatic invasive species, and knowingly launching a boat carrying aquatic invasive plants or animals can get you a felony and a $5,000 fine. Schroer says the state is meeting this fall to focus more on the law side of the aquatic invasive species issue. She says Montana is one of only five states free of zebra and quagga mussels. The others include Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Wyoming. Inspectors at the check stations will first ask the boat owner certain questions to determine if a boat is high risk.
We tell our staff anything that's coming from the lower Colorado River area, such as Arizona, you know, Nevada, that area, they're it's automatically high risk. If it's coming from the Great Lakes, automatically high risk.
Schroer says by mid-August, check stations turned up 31 boats with Eurasian watermilk foil. She says they've also intercepted boats with other invasive species, sometimes in strange ways. One boat was parked outside a Missoula home, and someone walking by noticed a zebra mussel. They called the FWP Tipmont hotline, and Schroer says, sure enough, it was a zebra mussel. They worked with the owner to get the boat cleaned. She says that boat was destined for Flathead Lake. At a Flathead Lake boat launch in Big Fork, a sign that should be familiar to boaters spells out, tiny creature, huge threat, and warns boaters to look out for zebra mussels. Next to it, another sign encourages people to clean, drain, and dry their boats. This is a message Schroer hopes will become second nature to people, akin to putting out their campfire or catch-and-release fishing.
You know, just be aware of your equipment and you know, look and see. And if you see something suspicious, call Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and, you know, we'll check it out. And, you know, you could be that by you taking action, you could be safeguarding, you know, your favorite lake and the rest of the water bodies in the state.
Schroer says what's commonly unknown is the danger posed by standing water transported from one water body to another. That can be harboring microscopic hitchhikers and must be drained. She says most boaters at the check stations had some knowledge of the risks of aquatic invasive species, but there's still a long way to go. Most check stations are wrapping up for the year. In 2012, they checked more than 25,000 boats. Schroer says this year, they're on track to hit or exceed that number. Katrin Fry reporting from the Flathead.
Montana wildlife officials say a black bear wounded by a bow hunter bit the arm of the hunter's companion before it died. State Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks spokesman John Fraley says a man was hunting Tuesday near Thompson Falls when he shot the 150-pound female black bear with a bow and arrow. The hunter waited for several hours to try to make sure the bear was dead before he started tracking it. The hunter located the wounded bear and shot it twice more with his bow. The bear then ran down a hill and encountered a man who had arrived to assist the hunter. The bear bit the second man's arm before it died. The injured man was treated at the hospital in Plains and released. Fish, Wildlife, and Parks officials say the hunter legally tracked the bear.
Wild Yellowstone National Park bison are now roaming the plains of Fort Belknap Indian Reservation in north-central Montana, or at least a small section of the plains. 34 of the animals were released onto a roughly 1.5 square mile pasture late last month. Fort Belknap received them through a deal with the Montana Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks after the bison wandered north of Yellowstone's boundary and were captured. Tribes hail the arrival of these genetically pure bison as a return of cultural heritage, but the excitement is not universal. In tonight's feature interview, Capitol reporter Dan Boyce takes us to Fort Belknap, where those living closest to the cherished Yellowstone buffalo have the greatest concerns.
Driving over a small rise south of Fort Belknap Agency, you see the same rolling dry grassland you've been seeing for miles. But for one noticeable difference, the fence.
First of all, just looking at it, it looks kind of intimidating, like it's a pretty serious enclosure.
Looking at the fence right now, Mark Azure.
I'm the director of the Fort Belknap Tribal Fish, Wildlife, and Buffalo Program.
He's dwarfed by 8-inch thick, 8-foot-tall wooden posts, spaced between every 3 8-foot-tall metal fence posts. The posts supporting a grid of woven steel wire. A video on the Great Falls Tribune website shows Fort Belknap's Yellowstone bison thundering from a horse trailer into the fenced pasture. Crowds watch from the beds of pickup trucks, cheering. Many see it as a welcome home. A few see it as an intrusion.
Lita?
Yeah.
Hi.
Lita Calvin lives at the base of the hill, across the highway from the enclosure. She's a tribal member.
I'm a Gros Ventre and a Assiniboine.
She and her husband run a small cow-calf operation. Today, she's running around the house in a t-shirt and basketball shorts, taking care of the kids.
Two of them in the back room playing, and this one's watching SpongeBob.
Who watched that, Missy?
What?
Howdy.
She worries about the bison behind that tall fence at the top of the hill. She worries about her livelihood.
You know, people find out that we have the cattle here and the bison are next to them. People are going to be less apt to buy our calves in the fall.
Because of brucellosis, or the fear of brucellosis, the disease runs in bison and elk and can cause cattle to abort their calves. It could pretty much ruin a ranch's business if it were found in their stock. Now, these bison, Fort Belknap's Yellowstone bison, they have been tested again and again. Every year for the past 6 years, they do not have brucellosis. Calvin says it doesn't matter. It's the perception.
People around, they're not going to listen to all that.
I'm not confident in that fence at all.
Over on another side of the enclosure, a rancher stands out on his dusty piece of land.
I'm a poor rancher as it is.
Wearing bright orange Oakley sunglasses below a beat-up brown cowboy hat, 56-year-old Mike McCabe.
My mother was a full-blooded Indian, and my dad was a full-blooded Irishman. I'm a half-breed.
He doesn't really see what the big deal is with these full-blooded buffalo. Fort Belknap already has a herd of hundreds of bison. They do have a small percentage of cattle genes.
I don't think you'd be able to tell the difference. You know, if you looked at these buffalo here and over there.
Landowners surrounding the other bison herd have complained for years the reservation doesn't properly care for them. They break out, damaging private property, eating hay. McCabe thinks the same thing could happen with these genetically pure bison. The reservation does not plan to feed them for the first year, hoping they will survive off the wild grasses already growing in their pasture.
If they're starving, I can almost imagine they're going to try to get through there somehow.
McCabe says his biggest problem is the reservation never asked him what he thought of the idea.
I never had no input whatsoever.
And Lita Calvin, back on the other side, says the same thing.
I was never contacted. They just pretty much said, we're putting the bison here and that's what's going to happen.
Fort Belknap Tribal Fish, Wildlife, and Buffalo Program Director Mark Azure is driving through the gate of the bison enclosure.
We'll see just how close we can get.
State Representative and Tribal Member Clarina Brocky is riding in his pickup, too. They say Fort Belknap began building the bison fence over a year ago, and landowners had plenty of chances to speak with the tribal council if they had problems. They say Lita Calvin and Mike McCabe never did that. But they say more outreach could be done.
I think that the tribe could meet with them, you know, and try to work out those concerns and let them know that they're going to do everything they can to ensure that the bison remain contained in this area.
It was kind of a recommendation by then Governor Schweitzer that we put this type of fence up if we want those Yellowstone animals, which there they are right there.
Azure stops his pickup. About 24 of the furry beasts are gathering around a watering hole, grazing, looking at us, some rolling in the dirt.
This is the first time I'm seeing them.
Clarina Brocky says when the bison disappeared from these lands generations ago, so too did many tribal ceremonies and so much culture. To have genetically pure bison back on the landscape, to her, that's significant.
These are the same bison that were with my ancestors. These are the same bison that helped my grandparents and my ancestors survive. These are the same bison.
Fort Belknap signed documents with the Montana Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks in order to receive the 34 bison. FWP will be overseeing the reservation's management of the animals until the spring of 2017. If the state decides the tribes aren't taking good enough care of them, they can be taken away. Azure says Fort Belknap worked hard to get the Yellowstone bison for years, making their case to FWP, lobbying the legislature, and constructing a fence he argues is as restrictive as any in the state.
And we're not just going to stop because they're here.
Oh, give me back my M.
Lita Calvin says it will take her some time to feel better about the bison and how the tribes went about bringing them here. But even now, she does see positives. They're part of her kids' heritage.
And, you know, they can go and tell their friends, hey, I live by the buffalo. The buffalo live in my backyard, pretty much.
As long as they aren't living literally in her backyard. I'm Dan Boyce. reporting from the Fort Belknap Indian Reservation.
In tonight's weather forecast for west of the Continental Divide, tonight calls for mostly clear skies with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. Lows will be in the 40s. Tomorrow expect partly cloudy skies with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Highs will be in the upper 70s to mid 80s. For central Montana, tonight look for mostly clear skies with lows around 50 to 55 degrees. Tomorrow calls for partly cloudy skies with a slight chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon. Highs will stay around 80 to 85 degrees. And for southwest Montana, tonight expect mostly cloudy skies, then becoming partly cloudy with a chance of scattered rain showers and isolated thunderstorms. Lows will stay in the lower 50s. Tomorrow, look for mostly cloudy skies with scattered rain showers and a slight chance of thunderstorms. Highs will be in the upper 70s to lower 80s. And now for the editorial comments of Skander Spies.
This past May, I attended two meetings full of contractors, architects, and planners. One was a listening session for the public to provide commentary on the adoption of a new energy code for all buildings in the state of Montana. The other was a public meeting of a group called the Northern Rockies Passive House Alliance. Both meetings were about energy conservation in buildings, but the tone between the two couldn't have been more different. At the listening session, I heard a lot about why any energy code improvements at all will cause reckless damage to a fragile industry. Energy efficiency was seen as a threat, and I left feeling hopeless. At the second meeting, I listened to 2 hours of healthy dialogue about the future of the building industry, about how a more aggressive voluntary standard can increase comfort and value for building owners while drastically reducing energy use and innovating the marketplace. Here, energy efficiency was an opportunity, and I left feeling ready to get back to work. The new state code updates aim for a 15% reduction in energy use, while the voluntary standard aims for 85%. While green building is all the rage, meeting these standards while maintaining the budget can be a daunting task that many contractors feel uncertain taking on. I serve as the secretary of the board for the second group, the Northern Rockies Passive House Alliance. We are a collection of contractors and architects dedicated to promoting an aggressive building energy consumption standard called Passive House. I also work full-time as a project manager for Energetics Construction, a small Missoula company that specializes in creating exceptionally comfortable and energy-efficient buildings. Construction wasn't where I expected my career to take me. I finished university with a degree in mechanical engineering and got a job creating computer models of low-energy use buildings. After a few years, though, it seemed my models and recommendations never really hit home. There was a lot more to reducing energy use than computer simulations and consulting reports, so I started looking for the missing pieces. I came to Montana by chance to attend an Aero annual meeting. I found Energetics because they knew a lot about Passive House, and I wanted more hands-on experience. I joined their team and have gotten to work on some of the most energy-efficient buildings in Montana. It has also brought me face-to-face with the gritty challenges that face the green building community. If you lived in the 70s, you probably remember some popularity around the term passive solar design. The idea caught on big in Germany, and scientists there formalized the design and construction principles into a rigorous standard that aims to reduce building energy use by 75 to 90% when compared to the current American codes. Passive House represents the practical limit as to how far it is possible to reduce energy use, and represents the future of where our industry can go. In Montana, energy bills cost families and businesses $1.8 billion each year. If we built every residential and small commercial building to the German standard, we would have $1.4 billion to invest back into our communities. Beyond the bottom line, the Montana landscape is one of the best parts of living here. The biggest environmental impact of a building comes from the energy it uses over the course of its lifetime. Delivering major reductions in energy use requires innovative design, more involved communication, and new methods and materials that can seem unnecessary or unfamiliar to many contractors. Cutting-edge standards like Passive House, pave the way for new methods and materials in the marketplace. That's why the team I work with practices our passive house knowledge on almost every project we do, even though we haven't built a whole certified building yet. The practice has taught us how to meet other standards, like the newly proposed code, more easily and with less incremental cost. This practice has also shown us that every time we improve the energy efficiency of a building, we also improve the comfort, indoor air quality, and overall durability for the building owner. The construction industry has always been required to adapt to new standards. The proposed energy code isn't nearly so drastic as Passive House, and it is a good step in the right direction. Better energy codes ensure better buildings for owners and investors, and a better future for our kids. Urge your representative to support the new code in the next legislative session. I am certain that more efficient buildings are an opportunity we cannot afford to miss. In Missoula, I'm Skander Spies for the Alternative Energy Resources Organization. Arrow has been linking people with sustainable agriculture and energy solutions since 1974. Visit us online at aeromt.org.
Skander Spies is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Courtney Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Jovetich. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.